Welcome to the Electric Drum here on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario, and I am with David Lee Asbury.
How you doing, brother? How's it going?
Excellent. Fixingfather.org.
Yes.
And there's some positions in the community that contribute to our society. But
we try. How you doing, man? Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you very much for coming through and making an effort. I know you've been busy lately, so you're always busy.
You got to keep moving, man. Ain't nothing wrong with that. You know, just keep moving. You know,
okay. That's how you maintain that youthful smile.
Netflix, you know, that kind of stuff can get you laying on your back and, all right, what's the next one? That's the next one. But you got to put that stuff to the side and get your stuff done. Carve out your corner and get your stuff done, man. You know, I'm trying to do.
Let's dig in a little bit about your history. Where are you from originally?
I am from Chelsea, New York City. Grew up, born and raised in New York, way downtown on 17th Street, 9th Avenue. Grew up adjacent to the legendary Wayne's family. So I was in the green building. They were in the blue building. So that was a wonderful experience of, just family back then. You know, it was just all about family back then. So I really enjoyed really enjoyed that experience.
Can you describe New York at that time?
Fulton Projects, sort of like a melting pot. The idea was to bring in African-Americans, Hispanics, whites, bring them all into this area. And kind of, I thought it was sort of like a test or something to just bring all of these folks into this one area, the projects, Fulton Projects, and just see exactly what happens. And I grew up with the utmost respect for, my friend's parents, regardless of their race. It was a lot different than it is, I would say, now. There was like the utmost respect for Mr. Black on the fourth floor, the Barrero family, Italian family on the fifth floor. So it was like she was like my mom. She told me to stop doing something. I stopped doing it. It wasn't no going back and forth, like, who are you talking to? Or, you know, I'm going to tell my mother on you. You just understood that, you know, within your building, you're going to have parents. And if you're doing something wrong, you better not do it wrong. You better not do it around them, because they're going, you know, they had that green light to take care of business, you know, tell you what you need to do and what you need to stop doing, you know. And you try that today. You tell somebody's kid, hey, listen, sit your behind down. You're going to have a problem. You know, you're going to have a problem. Who are you talking to? My kid? Why are you talking to my kid like that? You know, so, kids are a lot more sensitive now. So I kind of miss that, but you have to adjust or you'll be fighting everyone. You know, you got to adjust.
Are you an only child or?
I have a brother and a sister, older sister and my brother. Brother's a military guy. Sister right now, she's in South Carolina with my mom, you know.
So, and growing up, how were they influenced? I mean, did they look out? I mean, was it tight-knit? You looked out for each other?
It was a very tight. We grew up, and one of the things that my parents had always said was, you guys always check on each other. You know what I mean? And you don't have to have these long, drawn-out conversations when you call, but just make sure, like every week, hey, Joe, you good? Yeah, I'm good. All right, man, talk to you later. My brother's long with it. All right, man, talk to you later, man. Everything all right? Yeah, man. So that is how we grew up, and that's in us to this day. Even, you know, it makes it a little easier now, your little text, you know, hey, sis, how you doing? So we were really, you know, I would say yes, we were really tight-knit family. Father, head of the household, mother stayed home. She did work in the hospital for a little while, but for the most part, she stayed home, took care of us. And dad had his own trucking business. So he was working at Ford Motor Company and they had this big layoff. And I remember because he used to leave at 4 a.m. and then all of a sudden he wasn't leaving. You know, he was with me. He was with me in the morning. I was like, what's going on? You know? And he would always talk about, you know, I wanna buy my own truck. I wanna buy my own truck. And one day he came home with this like piece of crap truck. I remember it was this blue truck. It was just a mess. And that was the beginning of him, you know, becoming his own man, becoming his own entrepreneur. And I remember that, you know, I remember him building it from that truck to another truck, and then from that truck to three trucks. You know what I mean? Like I saw the hustle, man, in him. My dad used to sell stockings. He used to sell sweaters, you know, just doing all of these things for us, you know, for us. So when you see that hustle, and you're a part of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's in you. That same hustle that I saw him do, you know, I remember him waking me up in the morning. Hey, man, get up. You get ready to go to work. You know, I work with him in the summers. And he'd get up, get fully dressed, right? I'm laying in the bed. He'd make sure he's ready, had his coffee. And then he would knock on the door. Hey, man, come on. You know, like I'm late, you know, you know, like I'm late. Hey, man, listen, I'm getting ready to go. So I get up, throw my clothes on, you know, and, you know, looking at the watch and all of that. So that's how I ended up being like this time conscious guy. Like you see today, I got here like 20 minutes earlier. He was like, hey, Dave, man, give me a couple of minutes. But that's how I became this time conscious guy, you know, mm-hmm. where, you know, it is so imperative that you be on time. And, you know, trying to relay that to the kids that I meet that, you know, it's very important. Be on time. You know, don't come in, you know, somebody says that, you know, you're supposed to be at 10 o'clock. You get there at 10:30 with an attitude, you know, no. You know, so that's where all of that comes from my dad.
Wow.
My dad. Yeah. Yeah.
And your mom, nurturing mother?
Nurturing mom, took care of us. She was just phenomenal, man. And my, you know, my mom's, you know, dealing with Alzheimer's right now. And that is a process that, I don't know if you've ever dealt with, you know, just an individual, not, you know, not knowing, you know, who you are, you know, you're like, hey, mom, you know, like, who is this guy? You know, she'll have to ask my sister, who is that? Is that Joe? Is that Dave? Once in a while, it'll come back. But that is something that I think none of us was ready for. But she was my guiding light. You know, I remember one time I had wanted to go to the, what is it called? The Maritime. It was a school that was on a boat. Why I wanted to do this, I don't know. It just seemed like it was cool. So I get on the, you know, I graduated into high school, and I get on this boat, and they have us outside, like doing stuff that you would do on the boat, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, what is this? You know, I was a sickly kid. So we're doing all of this stuff, like swabbing the deck and all of this stuff. And I'm saying, yo, I knew I wasn't cut out for it, you know. And I wanted to get out so bad. It was just such a problem trying to get out of the school and just going to my neighboring school. And I remember my mother saying, you know, enough is enough. And I remember us going down to the Board of Ed, and my mother just like, you know, my son had pneumonia and he's going to be. I just remember her pleading. And next thing you know, here you go, you know, and she would just never let me forget that, man. But she got me out, and, you know, just like that, you know, I went to Charles Evans Hughes High School, and that was maybe like 5 minutes away from me. I could walk there. And, you know, I just remember her being that person that stood up for me. And that also is ingrained in you with your kids and with other kids. Be that person that's going to fight for your kids, man, because nobody else is going to do that, you know. So you be that person. Stick in, you know, get in there and get in the trenches. And if you feel as though your son or your daughter are right, or even if they are wrong, you get in there and you fight, man. You fight. And that's where I got that from.
Importance of having those role models in your life.
Well, you think about it, right? Imagine they're not there. I was talking to a dad recently, and he just said something that was so deep. He was like, I have my son. I've done some stuff in the past, but I have my son now, and I can't believe how much time I've missed, right? So he's doing all of this stuff with his son, right? All of this stuff. He's being the dad that he needs to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Great dad. And his son is looking up to him. And his son's cousins see this, right? And his son's cousins have, you know, they got other uncles, right? And this guy that had just got out of, just came back from being incarcerated. But he got it now, you know. You don't need the fast money, the week-to-week money. You make it work. You know, that's what he told me. He says, you make it work. We know that, right? But there's a lot of brothers out there that don't know that. That week-to-week money, they don't want that week-to-week money. They want that fast money, right? But he got it now. Say, hey, man, I understand that. And he wants his son to understand that, right? So going back to the cousins, so when he's interacting with his son, the cousins see this and they want to be with him. So what he was saying, he said, Dave, imagine if I'm not on the board anymore. What happens to these three kids? He says, like, what happens to these three kids if I'm not on the board? If I remove myself from the board doing something stupid. Mm-hmm. So he said it could never happen again. Mm. I go broke and it will never, ever happen again because this kid right here is just too important to me. And when you see that's what makes me do what I do.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario, and right now I am speaking with Dr. David Lee Asbury.
Before we get into it.
Yeah, yeah.
The road to becoming doctor.
I went through a horrendous divorce, right? Mm-hmm. Went through a horrendous divorce, man. And, while down at family court, I was looking at fathers with big question marks on their heads. And the mothers, they're just so relaxed. They're like, you know, I know exactly what's going on. You know, mothers know mm-hmm. what's going on because mm-hmm. mothers have girlfriends that say, hey, listen, you need to do this, that, this. We go down there and it's big confusion. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what we're going to have to pay. We don't know what is going to happen after. So I was in that situation, right? I'm in that situation and I'm just confused, scared. Worried about my future in addition to my son's life. And I remember saying, God, if you get me through this, I am going to do any and everything that I can do to help dads, right? Mm-hmm. To help dads. And I'm going to get to the education piece. So I go through the custody battle. And I lose. So I lose the custody battle. My wife, we both basically had joint custody. After that, I went through a depression because I really, really thought that I was going to win. I really thought I was going to win. I mean, the arrogance of it all, but I really thought I was going to win. But I didn't win. And I remember my dad coming over, my dad saying, you know, he's like, yo, son, what's going on? And I was telling him what's going on. And he said, let me see the order. Right? He said, let me see the order that the judge gave you. So he pulled the order and he noticed in the back, because I remember I had just thrown it off to the side. He looked on the back and there was a short order that the judge had written. And the judge had said, David Asbury has weekly visits. David Asbury has all of the holidays that I wanted. David Asbury has want to make sure that all the information, all of the schooling information, because I was very serious about that. I wasn't getting the information from the school. They basically told me I couldn't get it because we were going through that divorce. But basically, she said David Asbury will have access to all school records, anything that he needs. You know, he can basically go to the school and get. And then the last one was you cannot leave the state without coming to the court and notifying David Asbury. So my dad looked at me and he said, yo, seems to me like, you know, you say that you lost, but it seems to me that everything that you have here, right, is what fathers should get, fathers should have. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of my aha moment. You know, that was sort of my aha moment that sort of speared me to say, I'm creating a program so that fathers get this. Mm-hmm. Ones that are okay with being, you know, having joint custody or seeing their kids on every other week. At the least, this is what they need to have. So I basically went back to school and I had gotten my doctorate degree. And when I went back to school, my dissertation focused on how non-resident, of course, it's fatherhood, right? I did my dissertation on fatherhood. So it focused on how non-resident fathers maintain their role as fathers while dealing with the ambiguities associated with fatherhood. So I did a qualitative study where I interviewed 13 dads, and just to find out what are these dads, 13 African-American dads, just to find out what are these dads going through? What's so different about these fathers? And we found out these fathers are experiencing a sense of powerlessness with respect to knowing about the child support system, a sense of powerlessness with respect to dealing with their wife or their the mother of their child, a sense of powerlessness with their communication with the world, in getting the world to understand that just because we're African-American fathers, we're not deadbeat. We love our kids, but you don't see me as this. As soon as you see me, you see deadbeat dad, you see problem. So getting the world to understand that, hey, I'm out here. I'm a good dad. I'm doing all that I have to do. I'm doing what I can do, you know? But we don't see that. You know, we just see African-American dude. Yeah, he's probably not taking care of his kids, you know, probably not taking care of his kids, you know, and that's not the case. It's a lot of dads out here killing it, man. But we don't hear about those stories. Those stories are boring. Who wants to hear about that? Who wants to hear about a dad taking care of his kids? You'd rather hear about the dude that hasn't paid child support for like, you know, 6 years and owes $60,000. That's news. But the guy that's doing the damn thing every day, the UPS guy that's working the UPS every day, working, that's boring. Wants to hear about that. So, you know, that's how the, you know, I ended up getting my doctor's degree in executive leadership. And that was my dissertation. Yeah.
You're listening to 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. This is The Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario here with Dr. David Lee Asbury. Now, this is before or after your first publishing, your book with the Wayans brothers?
That is after. Okay. That was after. And, you know, like I said, you know, grew up with the family. And when Damon had went out to L.A., you know, and he was doing his thing and making strides, you know. But while he was making strides, I would always email him. I would always call him and just say, hey, D, man, listen, how about we write a book one day? You know, nothing, you know. But, you know, you keep on that persistence, you know, just like my dad, that persistence. So, you know, doing. So I would always just drop him an email. Hey, man, boy, we should do a book one day, man. You know, so one day I was at work and I get a call and he says, hey, what's going on, man? And I was like, what's happening? You know, I didn't know who it was. You know, he says, you know who this is? And I was like, no. He said, this is D. So, you know, when you say D, you know, that's sort of what we call them in the streets, you know. So I was like, oh, what's up, D? How you doing, man? You know, all of that. And he's like, and I never forget, he says, listen, I got some opportunity for you. And I was like, opportunity. He says, yeah, meet me at the so-and-so hotel at around 3 o'clock. He didn't ask me if I could be there. He just like, meet me at the so-and-so hotel. So I was just like, you know, oh man, what's going on? Opportunity. So I remember the next day, I doing my little doodad, you know, trying to look sharp, you know, and I get to the hotel. So I meet him at the, you know, go upstairs. They let me up. And just seeing him, man, you know, I remember he had this sort of, you know, this great smile, you know, this sort of bright smile. And that was different, you know, from way back in the day. And it was like the first time I've seen him in a while. And, you know, so we sat down, man, and he just talked about what he wanted to do. So he wanted to create a book and he wanted me to come out to L.A. He wanted me to follow him while he's doing his comedy. And I would go to wherever he would go to do stand up. I would go and just, you know, sort of write down the funny stuff, all of the stuff that got the big, big laughs, and just writing until we crafted, you know, chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, chapter four. So, I mean, you know, I was doing, you know, he would tell me he was coming to New York. So I would go to every New York comedy place that he, wherever he went, any comedy shop that he went to. And just sort of note down stuff. And then it got to a point where we had a good amount of material the first go round. And then he called me to come out to LA. which that was like the first time I had ever, that was the first time I've ever been on a plane. And there was a little worry about that, but you know, this is opportunity, right? Mm-hmm, you gotta be ready, you gotta be ready, gotta be ready. So, you know, I got on a plane, went out to LA, you know, had me set up in a hotel and all of that. You know, I was really just living like this life, man. I ain't gonna lie. It was so much fun and so surreal. He did a couple of shows out there. I remember we went to this restaurant, Mr. Chow's. So we're sitting and we're eating, and this lady comes over and she taps Damon, and Damon turns all around and looks at her and she's like, "Oh, how you doing?" And I didn't know who she was. And she said, "Listen," she said, "D's over there." Another D. She said, "D's over there. Y'all want to come on over?" And I was just like, Damon said to me, he says, "You're gonna enjoy this. You're gonna enjoy this." So we get up. And we go over, man, and the dude is sitting with his back to us, right? He turns around, and it's freaking Denzel Washington, man. And I'm just like, I'm just like, Denzel! I'm like, oh! I'm turning into this screaming kid, man. You know, inside, you know. But I'm trying to be cool. And this is really like, this is before you could like, you know, this is for all of that, you know. You know, this is like, the 90s, you know. I can't capture it, but it was just like so surreal. So, you know, we sit down with Denzel Washington and, you know, we're just talking about stuff, man. So then, you know, everybody's talking and then it's time for me to talk. And I'm just like, all right, don't screw it up. Denzel says, David, what brings you out here? And I remember I said, well, you know, me and Dee are trying to put a book together. He said, and then Denzel said, "You're trying to put a book together?" I said, nah, we're putting a book. He says, "Oh, okay, all right, you know, so straighten that out. So at the table, this little kid comes up, and this is like, you know, after In Living Color, but this little kid knows Damon. And he comes up and he wants an autograph. But the little kid doesn't know who the heck Denzel is. He knows Damon. All he knows is that he wants Damon's autograph. And so the kid looks at, so Denzel looks at the kid. He says, so what do you want? He says, "I want his autograph." He says, "You want my autograph?" He says, "No," you know, just like a kid. He says, "No, I want his autograph." So he says, "All right, I'll tell you what. You're going to get everybody at this table is somebody. You're going to get everybody's autograph. All right, how about that?" So then the kids start, you know, the mother's embarrassed, you know. And so that's my first autograph. I was like, "Ah, here you go." So I gave the kid my autograph. And, you know, it was just phenomenal. After we ended up, I mean, like I said, this sounds like crazy, but after Denzel took us to his house that he was building and we got to see his house, I remember he was like, he pulled some binoculars. He said, "You see all the way over there? That's going to be my mother-in-law's joint right there. So, you know, she'll be right there with us, you know." So it was just like one of the moments, man, that you just never, ever, you can never, ever forget, man. And, you know, and I have Damon to thank. But so the book comes out. And I remember when I was writing the book, right, somebody had told me, I don't know who is that. They said, "David, everything that you write, make sure you put with David Asbury. Because you want to make sure you're in the book somewhere, you know." So everything that I sent to Damon, I would say, you know, it would say real small, with David Asbury. So I got a call that the book was out. I remember running to Barnes & Noble's in New York, and I grabbed the book, and I opened it up, and I'm looking. I don't see nothing, and I said, "All right, calm down. I'll see it." Then I saw it in there, man. Sucker said, "Damon Wayans, big lights," you know, then it said real small. It said, "With David Asbury." And that, and he had told me that, you know, when you see your name, when you see that accomplishment, it is going to do so much for you, for your self-esteem and for your, you know, and it's something that you can just always carry and use. And it has opened up doors for me. You know, it was phenomenal, man.
The name of the book was?
Bootleg.
Is? Bootleg. Yeah. Bootleg, and you can still find it online?
Yeah, you can still find it online. There's still a couple of copies out there. If you want it, you know, you can find it, you know. And and that sparked me to continue the writing. I wrote a book called My Wife, My Kids, My God. And actually, I just got the book. It's on Audible now. So I had this brother that did it, Rodney. Can't remember his last name. But anyway, this brother killed it, got this baritone voice, and just kind of updated it a little. You know what I mean? So it's My Wife, My Kids, My God, and it's on Audible. You can get it and listen to it while you're working out. You're going to laugh, cry, laugh again. It is a phenomenal book. I actually love it. So, you know, if you, you know, I'll get you a copy. All right.
You're listening to 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. This is the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario here with Dr. David Lee Asbury. What year do you start Fixing Fathers?
Fixing Fathers was my, remember I was telling you about my promise, my promise to help dads, man. So in 2017, like after I finished getting the doctorates, I kind of dove right into that. So it was like 2017, I got the nonprofit status. And I remember telling folks about what I wanted to do, right? And one guy thought that this thing was a great idea. Like one dude just was like, yo, that's a great idea. And he sent me a check for $5,000. Now, that don't sound like a lot of money to everybody, but when you're starting out and you have this idea that nobody knows about or nobody, you know, you say, hey, listen, man, I'm going to start an organization for fathers. Yeah, okay, yeah, all right, cool. All right. Do your thing, brother, do your thing. But this dude sent me a check for $5,000, man. So that gave me some wind in my sails, man. Like, you know, it wasn't really, all right, so yeah, it was the money, because the money's going to help you to do things. I had already gotten an office and I was in that space where, all right, I got an office now. What do I do? You know, you know, I got the office. What do I do? You know, what am I going to do? Who am I going to help? You know? And then all of a sudden this $5,000 check comes in and it enabled me to just be able to flex a little, you know what I mean? Oh, I want to create a chess program. Give some chess sets out to kids. Bought 25 chess sets. That became the Fixing Fathers chess set giveaway. We've given over 500 chess sets away. Helping dads, meeting fathers, coming into the office and just sitting and talking them through their issues. Same crap that I was going through. Getting them to that space where they understand how imperative, how important they are. You know what I'm saying? And actually seeing it work. You know what I mean? So then Fixing Fathers start branching out into other things. You know, my wife said, David, we should start taking some kids to college or whatever. We should try going to a college fair. So I remember, you know, had the money, you know, $5,000 go a long way. So I had the money. So, you know, rented a bus and we had a 55 passenger bus and we took, I would say 20 kids. You know, we were swimming on the bus. You would like, mm-hmm. That was our first one. We took like 20 kids. And it was just like it was just phenomenal, man. It was just like seeing these kids in this space, wide-eyed, you know, the place was packed with like at least, you know, over 2,000 kids, you know, and seeing our Connecticut kids, you know, bringing our Connecticut kids out of the comforts of Connecticut and throwing them into New York City and just seeing them like, you know, like, what the heck is going on here, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. But this is what you're going to have to deal with when you go to school, when you go to college, you know, you have to deal with being on lines and being with different folks. But to see them navigate and then start coming into their own, you know what I mean? It was just like, we got to do this again, mm-hmm. And we got to do this again, and we got to do that. It just hasn't gotten stale.
So you have an annual bus trip.
Annual bus trip. It has grown.
HBCU.
Yeah, it's the Malcolm Bernard HBCU College Fair. Get on the bus College Fair. So, you know, we take them out there every year, you know, get a couple of grants here and there. And we've gone from like one bus to two buses, from two buses to three buses. Then COVID hit. We didn't go for, I think, 2 years. And then we went back again with two buses, went last year. And it is a wonderful event. You know, the kids can, the students, as my wife would say, the students can, learn a lot and it's their introduction, right? Especially the seniors, it's their introduction to bumping into people, meeting administrators, seeing students, getting on the spot, admittance to a school. And feeling that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Actually feeling, you know, getting,
that
you know,
sense of accomplishment.
Yes. Like, oh, I got, you know, getting on, you know, when we get back on the bus, we go back home, we basically blast, we put everybody on blast. All right, what school did you get into? And they got to get up. They got to get up in front of everyone. Well, I got into Morgan State. I got into some kids get full rides. So it's just a great, it's what keeps the smile on my, we're tired by the time it's over, but man, the recap when we're in the bed, we're laying down, just talking about what happened is what keeps a smile on my face. I love it. I love it, man.
I seen you can do diapers.
Oh, the diaper bank. Man, I can't believe that I could get excited about diapers, right? But you know, all of
but
my schooling.
But as a father and a new parent.
Yes, yes.
It is encumbersome. It is financially a financial burden.
Yes, exactly. So, okay. So there's diaper bank. Diaper bank started in Connecticut, right? Where I connected with Reliant Behavioral Health and Community Services, Lisa Gardner. And she has a diaper bank and she pulled me in, you know, David, you can give this to your fathers, whatever. And it was great. But then I started realizing, right? I had a mom that was having problems getting to me, right? She had a problem getting to me to get them. So we would try to connect and I'd be like, can you come on Saturday? And she'd be like, oh, well, I'm a little busy on gas money, you know, kind of far from her. So I started thinking, I said, you know what, man, I would like to just be able to have my own diaper bank where I get the parents the diapers that they want, meaning you want Loves, you want Pampers, name brand, right? How can I work it out where we can get what you want, where you tell me, right, what you want and I get it? Because as a nonprofit, a lot of times the nonprofits, we give people what we think they want, right? We give people, oh, I think this would be a good idea for you. We don't say to the person, how can I help you? What exactly do you want? So that's what this version of the diaper bank became, where I reached out to, now I have five, now maybe six families, young man that came last week, he might be down on it also. Actually, he got his Pampers yesterday. Asked him, what do you want? What do you want? He's not with the mother anymore. He says, well, David, I don't really know. Then get me the mother of your child. Get me her information. Find out what she wants. So they emailed me, sent me what they want. And I do it now through subscription program via Amazon. So that means they don't have to come to my office, right? So that cuts that wipes that out. And they get monthly supply of Pampers.
Wow.
It's on automatic, man.
Technology has taken over.
Yes, man. And it just works, man. So I get emails like, you know, I'll get a text like, David, got the Pampers. Thank you. Smile. You can't help it. You see how you smile? You can't help but smile. David, got the Pampers. We're good. Smile. So, I mean, you know, this is, you know, it seems like a small thing, but it is. This is phenomenal, man. So, you know, when I'm online, I want people to know exactly what I'm doing because there's a donate button there. We want to keep this program going, man.
And what's the website?
Fixingfathers.org.
We already know we got the annual bus trip to the HBCU College Fair.
Right.
We have the diaper bank.
Yeah. And we got a new program that we created thanks to the Prosperity Foundation grant that we got. It is called the Fixing Fathers Child Support Grant. I am so excited about this. So father that is in the arrears, father that is going through some child support issues. It's great to also have all of these classes that you can give to dads. Oh, you're going to be a better dad, you know, but the reality is, and my reality is that, some of our dads need money. Some of our dads need cold cash. You know, so you have a dad that's in the arrears, right? And in the arrears, let me explain that, you know, they basically owe the mom back child support. So let's just say it could be a kid that owes maybe $4,000. We want to be able to give that kid maybe $2,000 to help offset that, right? Mm-hmm. In addition to giving him that, maybe giving him a course in finance, also giving him a course in understanding the child support system. Understanding what you need to do so that he can continue and not fall behind. Because I was there, you know, I was in the arrears. I didn't have anyone to give me anything, But I sure enough was looking for ways in which to get that balance down because it's on your back. So perfect example, we have, I have one gentleman who is paying child support, right? But then in the arrears, he's also paying in the arrears. So let's just say he's paying $100 a week, right? And then the judge will have it set up where he's paying only $9 on the arrears. And he's never going to go away. He's going to continue to owe and owe and owe and owe $9, you know, and he's trying to he's struggling to pay child support. But then he has that balance in the arrears. So we want to take that arrears, right? We want to give him a grant and try to cut that arrears down or try to do away with it if we can. And we want to thank, wow, you know, the Prosperity Foundation for their grant to help us in doing that. So I'm excited, man.
I see. Time has run out.
Oh, man, I got so much I want to talk about, but I'll come back next time.
We will have you back. This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. And we just had a delightful conversation, an inspiring conversation with Dr. David Lee Asbury, author, entrepreneur, nonprofit organizer, an asset to our community. Thank you so much for your
Thank
time.
Thank you. Thank you so much, man. Take care.
This has been the Electric Drum, you already know, in the community 24/7, 365.